Welcome back, murder friends, to
Under the Influence of True Crime.
That's Em, and they're telling our story.
That's Kate, and she's under the influence.
And she's eating popcorn.
Yeah, so if you guys hear any crunchies, it's just our popcorn that we're both eating instead of focusing on our job.
Yeah, because popcorn is delicious, and my dad made it for us.
What's up?
Popcorn.
Anyway, beautiful. That was a nice crunch.
Thank you.
Let's see who can get the best crunch. Look at this twofer I got. Ready? Okay, do you want to go first?
I gotta find the right piece.
I found the right piece.
Then please.
Okay, ready? I'll go first.
Ooh, that was a good one.
Uh-huh. Okay, your turn. Nice.
We'll have to compare.
We'll have to compare. Y'all let me know who won. Whose popcorn crunch did you like better? This is off the rails immediately. Okay.
Any business?
Yes. Listen, we've been talking about it for weeks now. I did, in fact, create a Twitter. Haven't tweeted a single thing. But you can follow it at Under True Crime. Because that was the only thing I could get to fit.
Amazing.
Thank you.
You go. Yep, that's it.
I tried for like 10 minutes just inputting other things. And we've noticed, I don't know if anyone else has noticed, that when you break down and minimize our name, it is UTI of true crime. We are the UTI of the true crime community, and I didn't want to put that out there on Twitter. Eventually, I'll tweet something, so if you're on the Twitterverse, you can follow us on there. We'll, of course, add it to the end also. That's all the business I had. Did you have anything?
Other than the fact that we have hit 1,500 listeners.
1,000 listens. So that's fucking really bonkers. Cool. That's insane.
And, you know, we couldn't do it without those people who listen. Saray wanted me to let you know that your case frustrated her a ton.
The Bryce case?
She came up to me at work, unprompted, by the way. So I'm just minding my damn business. And she comes up and she went, seriously, all she had to do was get in the car and drive 3 hours and she wouldn't do that. And I was like, oh my God, I know, right?
Yeah.
And then today I got a text that just said, it hurted my soul because she listened
to Maddie Clifton. Oh my gosh, I have the funniest story real fast, if everyone doesn't mind me telling a really funny story.
Who cares if they mind? We're controlling the microphones.
Yeah, we're controlling the mic and the editing, so I'm going to tell a really funny story because my friend Allie, who I've talked about on here before, she called me the other day. She was like, are you busy? And I said, no. And she was like, well, I really want to tell you that hopefully Allie doesn't mind me sharing this. She goes, well, I was at therapy today and I was talking about you to my therapist. And my therapist goes, no offense, but is she in therapy too?
And you went, listen, she should be.
She should be. She ought to be.
She was. But then she was too good at therapy, so they promoted her to receptionist.
Basically, I tried to put on Facebook that I was office bitch at my place of employment. Wouldn't let me put bitch in my job title, but that's what I am. That's my legal title, is office bitch. Anyway, I thought that was fucking hilarious. I've got therapists trying to fix me all over the state. She's 3 hours away from me, so everyone knows.
Daniel said, I'm reaching out to other people now.
I've been trying to reach you about M's extended warranty. Okay.
Yes, regale us. What shall we be learning today?
So, they're going to be mad at me, but I don't care because I've had a bad week. And so I wanted a story that I like and I don't care. Because, like, normally we try to, like, space out stuff. No. This is yet another unsolved disappearance story. But don't worry.
I did not consent to this.
It's not like anything like Bryce's story. It's unsolved. It's worse. It's so much fun. This is my favorite unsolved story. I've talked about it before. So I'm going to tell you the story.
Give you guys one key word that should help solve everything for you. Mm-hmm. And it is Loki.
Yes.
Okay.
So this is the story of the only unsolved commercial flight hijacking in history. I didn't know that. I didn't know this was the only one.
That's interesting.
Isn't it? So this is the story of D.B. Cooper. I'm so excited.
Everyone in the audience went, we knew.
They were like, yeah, you didn't need to build up to that. Okay. So, our story starts the night before Thanksgiving, November 24th, 1971, which means that this November is the 50th anniversary of this.
Ooh, funky.
Right? Funky fresh. And I didn't realize until I got to the very end.
Kind of good timing for Loki.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. If you haven't watched Loki the series, go watch Loki the series. It's really fucking good.
That was a direct really good. Attack to me.
It was really, it's really fucking good. It's so good.
The thing is, I've even added it to my, like, my quote-unquote list. I just haven't opened Disney Plus.
I understand that. I'm always on Disney Plus, so I can't relate.
I'm ready.
Okay, so, November 24th, 1971, a middle-aged man carrying a black briefcase, wearing a black suit, a black overcoat, like a trench coat kind of thing, a white shirt, brown shoes, and a black tie entered the Portland International Airport.
That's a lot of black.
It's a lot of black with brown shoes.
I know, I was like, the brown choice loafer didn't shoes. Like that. Okay.
Annoying. Don't know what color the belt was, unfortunately.
Probably brown, given the shoes.
I hope so. He entered the Portland International Airport and went up to the desk of Northwest Orient Airlines. And he bought a one-way ticket to Seattle in cash. Guess, how much was this one-way ticket from Portland to Seattle in 1971?
$30.
$18.52.
Oh, okay.
So he paid in cash, and at this point in time, ID was not required to board a plane. So he didn't have to present any form of identification.
In case you guys were wondering, this was pre-9/11. That's why.
Yeah, it was 1971. So, yeah, so, you know, can just, anyone could just get on an airplane.
Do whatever you want on an airplane, basically.
But he did present himself, and then the name on the ticket was Dan Cooper.
Okay.
Interesting, right? So, the man boarded the Boeing 747, and the flight took off around 2:50 p.m. There were 36 passengers on the flight, not including crew, and the crew was pilot Captain William Scott, First Officer Bob Radicaz, Flight Engineer H.E. Anderson, and two flight attendants, Tina Mucklow, Florence Schaffner. Cooper ordered a bourbon and soda shortly after takeoff, and then he handed...
What kind of soda?
I'm just kidding. Ma'am?
I'm just here to cause chaos.
So after he ordered his bourbon, Tina, one of the flight attendants, came back, and Cooper handed her a handwritten note. And so normally, like, this... Don't laugh yet. You're making me start laughing. Don't laugh yet. So, especially on a smaller flight like this and, like, with someone who looked like Cooper looked, it was very normal for the flight attendants to be getting phone numbers from lonely businessmen. So that's what she assumed it was. So she put it in her pocket and walked away. And Cooper leaves.
I'm already laughing.
And Cooper had to tell her, and I quote, "Miss, you better look at that note. I have a mom."
I'm so unassuming that she didn't even take me as, like, a threatening anything. No. She went, not right now.
Because he wasn't acting weird. He wasn't acting nervous or skittish or anything. And so she straight up assumed that it was a phone number. Yeah. And, like, he's trying to, like, be on the
she
DL.
Went,
and
I'm so fucking hot. Listen. And he went, I'm trying to hijack not you, but flight.
He was trying to be so unassuming. And he'd be, oh, excuse me, please. I have a bomb. You gotta
wait.
You
have
it.
To, like, think of his fun. Like, you know, he was like, oh, excuse me, ma'am. You better look at that note.
If you look at the note, you will see I have a bomb.
I do have a bomb, ma'am. Could you please look at that note? Thank you kindly.
Incredible.
Yeah, basically.
So the note just
reiterated what he just said. I have a bomb.
Yeah, he took back the note from her, so we don't have, like, a picture of it, and I don't know why. But basically the note just said, I have a bomb, and demanded that she sits down next to him. And so, obviously,
why?
She did. Okay. Because he was going to give her a list of demands in a second.
Oh, he just had to, like, gear up for it.
Mm-hmm. So she sits down and asks if she can see the bomb, which is in his briefcase. And he opens his briefcase, and there are 8 red cylinders all connected by red wires.
She says, ah, convincing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So Cooper told her to write down his demands and give it to the pilot. And obviously she did as told.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Do you think the pilot is like a king or like a president or something? You're like, you're going to get me a plane. Okay, well, I only have this plane.
I just have this single one. And we're kind of
like using it. So, or what? He's going to give me $1 million. Do you know what I make? It's 1971. I can't do that. What?
Well, because we'll get into it. He can then tell the people who needs to be told.
Oh, okay, hear me out here now. Mm-hmm. They go, no, and the plane only has so much fuel to stay in the air for so long.
Mm-hmm.
You're not magic, D.B. Cooper.
He has a bomb. Oh. Presumably.
Presumably.
I don't think it was a real bomb, everybody.
I also don't think it was.
But they had no idea to know that. It was 1971 and they were up in the sky.
Listen.
Yeah,
listening. I'm just saying.
Everyone's listening.
The pilot could have been like,
we're not blaming the pilot.
Sit back down.
The pilot shouldn't have been brought into this.
D.B. Cooper, what did you think he was going to be able to do for you?
Have you ever seen, have you ever been a part of an airplane hijacking where the pilot wasn't involved in some way? You got to let him know.
I'm just saying that the pilot had no reason to receive a list of demands.
Right.
He has no power.
Right.
His whole Except thing is flying the plane.
He's the only one who can contact air control, which is what he does. Give me a second. We're getting there. Don't interrupt. God.
I am so upset.
Good. So is D.B. Cooper.
Good. Honestly, I hope he was embarrassed, too, when he had to be like, oh, excuse me, could you check my notes?
We're going to be able to make fun of him again in just a second,
Great.
Too. So, the note said, and I quote, I want $200,000 by 5 p.m. in cash. Put it in a knapsack.
Babe, we're on a plane. Mm-hmm. Where do you want us to get that $2,000? You want us to land $200,000.
Listen, oh. We're getting there. Give me a minute.
I am so upset uh-huh. with the logic in this.
Uh-huh.
A plane is not where you get that.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever been a part of a hijacking before?
I don't need you to worry about what I've been a part of.
Are you T.B. Cooper?
I gotta go.
Okay, quote. I want $200,000 by 5 p.m. in cash. Put it in a knapsack. I want 2 front parachutes and 2 back parachutes. When we land, I want a fuel truck ready to refuel. No funny stuff or I'll do the job.
That's too dramatic.
I agree. He also asked for the cash to be in $20 bills.
Okay,
here we go. The pilot received the note and he contacted air traffic control, who then contacted the FBI. And then for some reason, the airline's president was the final decision maker and he's the one that said, yeah, do what the man says. I don't know. Okay. I don't know. Why was he in charge? Whatever.
Because the FBI had no credibility yet.
Yeah, I guess. So the flight from Portland to Seattle is only 30 minutes long. So, like, he wanted all of this stuff done in the roughly 15 minutes before they landed.
The quickest fucking flight. Like, could you...
Literally.
And you stayed in the same state?
Well, they're not in the same state. Portland, Oregon to Seattle, Washington.
My bad. I didn't hear what the first place was. And I was like, shoot my shot.
You were close. You were close. So they weren't obviously able to get everything ready before they landed. It took hours to get the parachutes, the fuel truck, and the money. So the flight circled in air for hours above the airport. And the pilot got on the intercom and told the other passengers that they were going to stay in the air due to a minor mechanical issue because the passengers were not aware of the hijacking. They had no idea.
Was he like in first class?
No, there were only 36 people.
Okay.
And it was a Boeing 747. Like, it's a decent size plane.
Well, my thing is, when he was like, excuse me, ma'am.
Well, he whispered. Okay. She was still there, so he wasn't like, ma'am?
Could you read that note before you go into the cockpit, please?
She, like, turned to walk away, and then he went, oh, excuse me, ma'am.
You're going to want to read that note.
Mm-hmm.
Got it. I thought she got further away and he had to
when
your waitress goes too far away when you realize you also needed ranch.
I get it. No, she was there. It was said that he whispered it.
Got it.
So the reason it was taking so long to get all this is because the FBI was making a microfilm print of each individual bill so that they would have the serial numbers.
Okay.
And then also, there's a Air Force base nearby, and D.B. Cooper was offered, like, Air Force-grade parachutes, and he declined and said he wanted civilian parachutes with the FBI, which the FBI got from a local flight school.
What?
Nearby. I don't know.
He said, I don't want your military shit.
Literally. Which we'll get into also, so it's just like, okay. So during this time when they're up there just circling around, the flight crew discovered that Cooper was really familiar with the area. It almost seemed like maybe he was from Seattle. He correctly identified Tacoma. Like, they flew over and he went, oh, that looks like Tacoma down there. Weird.
Okay.
And then he also mentioned that the McChord Air Force Base was only 20 minutes away from where they currently were.
Interesting.
Very. Crew said that the man was very calm and nice. He ordered a second drink, paid his tab, tipped the flight attendant, and offered to ask for meals for the crew when they landed in Seattle as part of his demands.
He went, listen, I'm not a bad guy.
Yeah.
What y'all need?
Just need $200,000 in non-denominational bills.
Honestly, what he asked for was
understandable.
Fairly smart.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he anticipated the FBI
mm-hmm.
tracking his shit, but whatever. Right.
So Tina, the flight attendant, is quoted as saying, he wasn't nervous. He seemed rather nice. He was never cruel or nasty. He was thoughtful and calm all the time.
Okay.
Weird. Weird. So the plane finally landed at 5:39 p.m. at the Seattle airport. And Cooper had the pilot taxi the aircraft to an isolated but well-lit area, demanded that all the shades on the windows be pulled down to keep police snipers from seeing in. And then the airport's operation manager, his name was Al Lee, met Tina at the stairs of the aircraft with the money and the parachutes, and he had, like, switched out of his, like, uniform into street clothes because he didn't want, like, Cooper to think that he was, like, an officer.
Right, okay.
So, after they exchanged the items, Cooper allowed all of the passengers and Florence to get off in exchange for the items, but he kept Tina and the three men that were in the cockpit. Like,
and maybe this is completely untrue.
Okay.
I'm suspicious.
Okay.
He's in love with Tina.
He's in love with Tina.
This one, he said.
That's a theory that no one's thought of yet.
Run away with me, Tina.
Maybe you figured out the... You I've solved it. Excuse me, FBI, step over. Move over, Kate's figured it out. She's cracked the case. He got the items, he let most of the people go. And while the plane was refueling, Cooper told the crew his plan. He asked that the pilot take him to Mexico City, but he didn't give any specific flight path. So how they got from Seattle to Mexico City was 100% up to the pilot.
Okay.
Which also means that there's no way he had an accomplice. Because they wouldn't have been able to set a meeting point because they would have no way to know which flight path the pilot was going to pick. So it rules out him having anyone helping him.
Does it?
Yes.
Okay.
Why would you say it doesn't?
Well, because he could still meet his partner in Mexico City.
They don't make it to Mexico City.
Word.
Yeah. Okay, so he asked that the pilot take him to Mexico City and demanded that they stay below 10,000 feet.
I'm so sorry, I interrupted mid-sentence.
He demanded that they stayed under 10,000 feet and that they couldn't fly any faster than 200 knots. Or I think it was 100 knots, which is around 200 miles an hour. Is the fastest he wanted them to go, okay. Which is also the slowest an aircraft can stay in the air. Okay, so a little ways into the flight, he put on dark wraparound sunglasses and took off his tie, which, like, seems pretty cool, right?
Okay.
It was a clip-on.
No. Gotta loosen this baddie, he said.
And it's just, like, ruins the moment. Instead of just I don't know. It wasn't a real tie. It was a clip-on tie, and that, for some reason, cracks me up so fucking much.
It's laughable, that's why.
Okay, so a little after 8 p.m., when the plane was between Seattle and Seattle, Washington, and Reno, Nevada, Cooper jumped out of the rear door of the plane with the money and two of the four parachutes.
Oh, shit.
He adios, bitches, and jumped out.
Wait, four? That was exactly the amount for the...
What?
There were four other people on board, weren't there? Three dudes and a girl?
There were the three men in the cockpit, Tina and D.B. Cooper. Uh-huh.
That only... Oh, wait, the plane's not crashing.
No, the plane lands safely.
Well, my thing was, I was like, he's going to open the door, and then, you know, everything, like, goes to shit once they open the door. Uh-huh. I'm sorry if that just made me sound, like, super dumb, but I was like, you know, they always open the door and like, ah, we're crashing.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, what a dick. He took so many of the parachutes.
No.
Okay.
Everyone's completely fine.
That makes me, I was like, wait, the plane's not crashing.
It was so good. I was like, yeah, there's five people. Where are we going with this, girl?
You said, your math is correct, I was but like, the ending.
Uh-huh.
Kevin, I'm calling the police.
Okay. So, I'm going to say that whole sentence again. A little after 8 p.m. when the plane was between Seattle, Washington, and Reno, Nevada, Cooper jumped out the rear door of the plane with the money and two of the four parachutes.
I do have one really important question, uh-huh. actually. Did he leave his clip-on tie?
Yes! I'll get into it. So the flight took off from Seattle at 7:40 and he jumped a little after 8. He started in Seattle and said, take me to Mexico City, but then jumped 20 minutes into the flight.
And gave the pilot total control over the flight path. Yeah. So he wouldn't have known where he jumped. Okay, I'm hearing the things you're picking. Okay.
Yep, okay. So the plane landed safely in Reno. No one died. The plane didn't crash.
In case you guys were wondering, that was just a completely important interjection that everyone should have maybe wondered.
Mm-hmm. There was no cuts. We didn't cut out any conversation.
Or questions. That's silly.
The plane landed safely in Reno, and that's when news of the hijacking finally broke, and one source mistakenly called Dan Cooper D.B. Cooper, and that's where the name came from, and it just stuck.
So, this motherfucker was like, my name's Dan. D.B.?
It's like when you're at Starbucks, and they're like, what's your name? And you say, M. This literally happened to me at Outback. I was at Outback with my friend Sunny.
We changed from Outback, Starbucks to Outback so quickly.
Well, because I was like, it's like when it happens. But then this actually happened to me. We went to Outback and I was like two. And they were like, that's going to be a 25-minute wait. Is that okay? And I said, yeah, that's fine. And they go, what's your name? And I said, M. And I watched her type the letter M and go, is that it? And I said, yep, that's the whole thing.
That's the one.
So it's like
my
it's
phone
like,
does that every time I try and say like, oh, I'm going to M's house. It'll just put an M apostrophe S. And I was
good
like,
enough.
What is she? The friggin' boss from James Bond?
Yes.
Okay.
It's like, he was like, that's Cooper.
That's it?
Dan Cooper. Did you say D.B. Cooper?
Yep, that's
sure did.
Yeah.
My name's M, the letter M. Is that it? So yes. What if it was? Okay.
No, there's an E. That spells me. Well, not if you put it in the right spot.
Okay, so anyway, that's where the name D.B. Cooper came from, because the name D.B. actually has no relevance to the story at all. He identified and put on the ticket Dan Cooper.
Funky.
Funky fresh, I think. So the FBI investigation was called NORJAC, which stood for Northwest Hijacking. Uh-huh. So they immediately searched the plane and found that the only... thing Cooper left on there was his little clip-on tie from JCPenney.
No! Amazing.
And then they also found another item belonging to Cooper, but they haven't ever released what that item was. The FBI was able to find a single crumb of DNA on the necktie. So the crew members helped the FBI create a sketch of Cooper. He was described as a white male, 6'1" tall, 170 to 175 pounds. He was in his mid-40s. He had an olive complexion, brown eyes, black hair. Quote, conventional cut parted on the left. and he was described as having a low voice but no accent. The flight crew spent hours with him, so the description of him was thought to be pretty accurate, and they all interviewed separately gave the same description.
Okay.
And they spent hours with the guy, so, like, sure. And he didn't even
the
put...
The pilot was flying the plane.
Tina and Florence sure did. And,
I trust Tina the most out of this.
I agree.
In terms of, like,
well, because they're in love, so I think I'd be able to describe that. Yeah.
She knows.
So the year after the hijacking, multiple letters were sent to newspapers and the FBI from people claiming to be D.B. Cooper. One claimed to be his brother and another claiming to be Cooper on his deathbed. None of those were founded at all. Like, nothing came from this.
Wow, weird. You mean more humans trying to claim?
I will never understand it.
I don't get it. Like, somebody did something shitty and you want to take credit for it? Maybe we just don't do shitty things. Mm-hmm. That's like that. What was that one? We covered the case. Pages. Those two boys posted a picture of, like, a bloody knife and they're mm-hmm. like, we killed. No, why?
Why? What was the point?
What did you do this for?
Yep. Well, in November 1972, two men named Donald Sylvester Murphy and William John Lewis were taken into custody for impersonating Cooper and trying to sell his tell-all book. What? What the fuck?
You said you're telling.
Also, D.B. Cooper was one single person.
True.
So obviously the FBI released the serial numbers from the $20 bills that D.B. stole. And the bills were never, like, found in circulation. Like, they were never used. And then in
is he the weirdest?
Because it was Logan. He got sucked up into the Bifrost. Anyway.
I can't stand you.
Can you tell me it didn't happen?
Not where's D.B. Cooper? I guess. No.
Where's Dan Cooper now, bitch? So in 1980, 9 years after the hijacking, an 8-year-old named Brian was camping with his family and found a rotting package that contained $5,800 that matched the serial numbers from some of the bills that D.B. Cooper had been given. And
how
these
much
were $5,800 out of the $200,000.
Okay.
So it's a very, very small chunk.
Right.
And these were found at a beach which has been nicknamed Tina Bar, which is off of a river. And the theory here is that while he was...
What is off of a river?
Tina Bar. So the bills were found at the beach called Tina Bar, which is off of a river. And the theory here is that while in the air, Cooper lost this bag of money and it landed in the river and eventually ended up there. That's all we've got.
Okay.
They searched the area, didn't find any more money. This is literally all they got.
Didn't find D.B. Cooper?
Nope, nothing.
He was camping. He's like, what's up?
Well, hey, took you long enough.
You did it.
So, Cooper was originally charged with air piracy, but that had a statute of limitations of 5 years. So, a grand jury voted to indict him for violation of the Hobbs Act, which has no statute of limitations. And so, for those that don't know, the Hobbs Act prevents people from extortion or robbery by wrongful use of force or fear.
Okay.
That's what
I could see where it would and it has vaguely fall into that.
Yeah. It has no statute of limitations, so if he were to get caught, like, now, he could still be charged with it.
I think there are certain things that shouldn't have statute of limitations.
I don't think most things. I think nothing should have a statute of limitations, but okay. Over the course of the first 5 years of the investigation, over 800 suspects were questioned, but all were eliminated except for 24.
Okay.
So we're going to go over a couple of my favorite ones. There's a lot more than this. This is just some fun ones. Richard Floyd McCoy is the favorite suspect of FBI agent Russell Kalam. 5 months after the D.B. Cooper hijacking, McCoy was arrested for hijacking an airplane.
Crazy.
And his was very similar to the Cooper case.
Is it possible he was not simply a copycat? He said that worked out well for Mr. Cooper.
Well, see, the thing is, he's definitely a copycat, and I even say it.
You said he didn't bring a clip-on tie, and that's how we know.
So, just like D.B. Cooper, he parachuted off the plane, he requested 4 parachutes, told crew members about the bomb in a note, which also contained the phrase, no funny stuff. His general demeanor was very similar to Cooper. And both hijackings occurred while Brigham Young University was on break, which is where Richard McCoy went to school. He was a college kid trying to hijack an airplane. Also, the undisclosed item that we talked about earlier was identified by Richard McCoy's family as belonging to him. But it still hasn't ever been released what that is. Yeah.
What does that mean?
I don't know.
What was it?
Eventually, Richard McCoy was dismissed as a suspect because he didn't match the description, which is thought to be super accurate because they spent so much time with him. They knew what he looked like. So it...
What part didn't he make? Like, you know what I mean? Like,
he just didn't look like the sketch at all. He didn't at all fit the description.
We've seen so many good sketches.
Right? So it definitely seems likely that this was a copycat hijacking. He saw that D.B. Cooper got away with it, took all the information that was there, and tried to copy it. And got caught.
I said that. I do that.
McCoy was arrested for his hijacking, but he escaped prison and then was killed during a shootout with police.
Shit.
Yeah. Another suspect was Robert Rackstraw, who was a veteran with parachute training who apparently had sent letters to a fellow veteran incriminating himself.
He said, do you want to hijack a plane?
When asked about the crime, Robert would apparently just simply make cryptic comments about it, but never actually deny his involvement.
That's like, well, I didn't say I did it. Well, but you didn't say you didn't.
No, you sure didn't. The FBI eventually ruled him out as a suspect, but there's not really a lot of information as why he was ruled out. He just was ruled out.
They said, don't worry about it.
So the next suspect we're going to talk about is who I think is the most likely person to do it.
But I'm listening.
So his name was Sheridan Peterson. He was an experienced skydiver with, he was an ex-Marine who served in World War II. And he worked as a technical engineer at Boeing in Seattle. So he would be familiar with the aircraft, and he would be familiar with parachuting, and he would be familiar with...
My friend's mom works at Boeing in Seattle.
Is she D.B. Cooper?
I don't think so. Interesting. But I can't rule it out completely.
Okay, great. It was known that he dressed like B.D. Cooper did.
B.D. Cooper?
That's what I wrote. It was known that he dressed like D.B. Cooper did, like in the suit with the trench coat and...
So gothic and then not matching shoes?
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
And he seemed to match the physical description pretty well. Sheridan himself actually said, quote, actually the FBI had good reason to suspect me. What?
They had a good reason to suspect me. But they had no reason to suspect me.
I'm crying. That's gonna stay in. That's staying in the episode. They had no reason to suspect me. You fucking idiot. Why am I so stupid? I'm so fucking dumb. What the fuck? They had no reason to suspect me.
That is good.
Anyway, guys, we broke Kate. I'm glad you all came on this journey with me. Okay, so.
And I digress.
And I quote, actually, the FBI had good reason to suspect me. Friends and associates agreed that I was without a doubt D.B. Cooper. There were too many circumstances involved for it to be a coincidence.
Your mom and dad sit down with you at dinner and they're like, we're pretty sure, Josh, that you're D.B. fucking Cooper.
Who is Josh?
I picked a name. I know it's Sheridan. Your fiancé sits down at dinner and says, did you do it?
And he just looks at you and goes, there's too many, it can't be a coincidence. Goes, what does that mean?
There's a lot of reason that makes sense. That's cryptic.
I mean, is that not almost a confession? There were too many circumstances involved for it to be a coincidence?
Yes.
Like, what?
He said, I did it, but if I never officially say the words... I did it.
And then he goes on, quote, at the time of the heist, I was...
I was sleeping. You can ask me, Mom.
Mm-mm. He doesn't even... At the time of the heist, I was 44 years old. That was the approximate age of Cooper. Was a...
Sheridan, you're not helping yourself, sir.
That was the approximate age Cooper was assumed to have been, and I closely resembled sketches of the hijacker. He said this. This is quoted. This is a direct quote from him.
Honey.
Tell me he didn't do it.
Why are you doing this?
There's no fucking way it wasn't him. And then, so, like, web sleuths have found that the FBI actually found chemicals on the clip-on JCPenney tie.
That match shit.
That match shit that Boeing was using that he would have only been able to pick up at
the... You've sold me.
It's him.
Wrap it up, I'll take it.
Here's the thing. He died in 2018 at the age of 92 without ever being arrested for the hijacking.
I don't need him to be arrested. I need him to admit it.
I mean...
I need him to be...
How is that not him?
There's... I need him to look everyone in the eye and be like, I'm Dan Cooper. And they go by D.B. Cooper. Grandpa, that's stupid.
Okay, here's a little fun. And before we get into the next suspect, do you remember who was also kind of on the lam in 1971?
Could you give me an area they would have been on the lam in?
Oh, I'll just give you the answer.
Oh, okay. I thought you wanted to guess.
Okay, I'll give you the guess. Well, it's someone that you've done a case on.
Oh.
Who would have been on the lam in 1971?
I've done the case on.
John List.
There it was. Mm-hmm. I was going to be like the bust with the Virginia because...
So he was very, very briefly thought that maybe he had done it because he was on the lam the same... Like, police were after him when this happened and they thought maybe he was trying to cover it up. But he was very, very quickly... taken off that suspect list.
Please, can we not give credit to such a stupid, stupid
literally,
man?
He was an idiot. There was no way he could have done this.
He literally confessed, murdered his whole family, and just happened to get away with it.
Because it was the 1970s.
Yeah, I was like, this was 70s. Like, what?
No. Literally, that's why he was able to do it. That's like saying that fucking Dennis Rader tried to hijack. Dennis Rader is D.B. Cooper.
He's a
bumbling idiot. Okay.
That's stupid.
Okay, the only other suspect that we're going to talk about very briefly is Dwayne Weber. He actually confessed on his deathbed. He was dying of kidney failure and pulled his wife close and said, I'm Dan Cooper. Quote.
Was there any evidence?
There was a little bit of evidence that pointed towards him, but not as much as Sheridan.
Not enough to satisfy you? Okay.
His wife later found a book about the case where he had written in the margins, but nothing has ever been said of what he had written in there. And then the only other thing is that he was known to drink bourbon often, and he had a knee injury, which he told his wife was from jumping out of a plane. And according to his family, he had taken a trip alone and traveled to where the money was found, and then a few months later, the money was found. And then he had also been in prison 6 times for forgery.
I was like, I just burped in the middle of that. You're gonna wanna...
I just kept going. I heard it.
I know. I was like, no.
No, I just kept going. According to his family, he had taken a trip alone and traveled to where the money was found. And then a few months later is when that 8-year-old found the money. But, like, also, that was a pretty popular spot. It wouldn't have really been, like, unheard of for someone to go there by themselves. But then he had also been in prison 6 times for burglary and for forgery. And then also, according to his wife, he had nightmares, where he would wake up yelling about leaving fingerprints on a plane. But here's the thing.
Okay.
Imagine, I'm on my deathbed, and you're there. Would I not make a joke?
I'm D.B. Cooper.
I'm D.B. Cooper.
Well, but you would pick someone that would not be realistic at all.
Right.
So, maybe he really was being like, listen, bitch.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible, and, like, it does seem like... You wouldn't really confess to it on your deathbed unless you were, like, it was true.
Yeah.
But it just doesn't, it just seems like a lot of coincidences.
Well, let's take a quote from our friend Sheridan.
Just to me, it seems, he doesn't seem like a very likely suspect.
Okay.
Did he hijack a plane? Maybe. Dan Cooper? I don't think so.
I just want to know why he didn't spend the money.
I know. That's the thing. Because, like, if you're...
You did this... For what?
For what reason? Unless you're Loki and you lost a bet to Thor.
Honestly, that isn't the most unlikely.
So the list of suspects goes on and on. I mean, there's 24 that were officially on their list of suspects. And, like, there's some really great articles, and obviously we'll still list them on our descriptions if you wanted to, like, look into yourself. Those are just, like, to me, the most likely. The FBI, however, theorizes that D.B. Cooper didn't survive the jump. So at the beginning
That still doesn't make sense.
Well, here's what happened. At the beginning of the investigation, they believed him to be a skilled jumper or skydiver, just based on the fact that he was just, like, so willing to jump out. But that narrative quickly falls apart when you look at the parachutes themselves and just, like, the conditions of everything. So he jumped out with two parachutes.
Okay.
One of them was a training parachute that was sewn shut. And the other one was a military-grade parachute that couldn't be steered. So it just, I mean, is it possible that he survived with that one parachute that you're not able to steer? Yeah, sure. But anyone with any kind of experience would not have jumped that night. Because it was at night, you couldn't see anything. It was a very wooded area where he jumped out.
Yeah.
It was cloudy, and he was wearing a trench coat and loafers. Like,
I just mean, like, why would we have not found...
Well, see, that's the thing. The only thing that doesn't really point to that is that his body, the parachutes, and the money have never been found.
That's what I'm saying. Like, something would have been found.
Yeah.
I wish the parachute or something would have, like...
Something. Even just the rest of the money or something. I don't know. The FBI described this as, quote, the longest and most exhaustive investigation that they've ever had. The case file for this, when you, like, stack it up, it's over 40 feet tall.
Wow.
I mean, it's almost 1,000 suspects are in there, you know? The case was officially closed in 2016 and remains unsolved 50 years later.
Bro.
So it is closed, but they have said, like, if anything comes up, they're still willing to reopen. Exactly. They're willing to look into it.
What's going to come back up?
It's been 50 fucking years.
I was like, there's no
If he was mid-40s when it happened and it's now 50 years later.
He would be 90s or dead.
Yeah. The most, to me anyway, the one that seems the most plausible died when he was 92 to 3 years ago.
Sheridan.
Yeah.
Or that other guy who confessed to it. But either way, they're
still dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dang.
So at this point, it's starting to look like we're never going to find out what actually happened.
I'm sick of these.
We all know what actually happened, though.
He and Tina ran away together.
No, it was Loki.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, you don't know. Or him and Tina ran away together. You know, I didn't find any information on where Tina is currently.
I'm saying.
If you were someone you know... is Tina. Send us a DM.
Please, Tina, let us know.
Let us know did you run away with Dan Cooper? The Phantom of the Sky? With his little clip-on tie? Did you have to take him to JCPenney to get a new clip-on tie?
No, they come in packs of two.
Oh, excuse me, I'm sorry.
This blue one was still at home.
Oh, okay, I understand.
Well, shit, that was a really good case, bro.
Thank you. I wanted to do one that I really enjoyed doing.
You earned it.
And also, I'm sorry for doing two unsolved ones in a row. But also...
Technically, you didn't, though, because Maddie was in the middle.
Maddie was in the middle, but my cases...
No one looks at it like that.
I know they don't.
Only we
do. I do.
I know.
So, we're going to post some pictures, the sketch of D.B. Cooper and all of that fun stuff on our Instagram.
At Under the Influence of True Crime.
We're also going to post it on our Facebook group.
At Under the Influence of True Crime.
We're also going to probably, maybe, if I feel like it, post it on our brand new Twitter.
At Under True Crime.
That is correct.
Nice.
Subject to change. You can send us an email.
At Under the Influence of True Crime.
@gmail.com. You can rate, review, and subscribe.
Anywhere you listen to your podcast.
Do it.
Please.
Please do it. I will show up to your house and fight you.
Hug you. If they do it, we're going to fight them?
If they don't do it.
Oh. Unless you want to be fought, in which case, that's up to you.
Let us know. We don't kink shame.
Whatever you're about. Consensuality is key.
You know what else you can do? Join us right back here next week for some more spooky tales.
Later, that.
This is off the fucking rails.